case of the day is Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company against Haight.
Well, it's still morning. Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Mike Reeses, and I'm here today on behalf of the appellant Grinnell Mutual Reinsurance Company. This appeal involves the construction of an endorsement issued as part of a business auto policy.
Before we get to the merits, I have a question about subject matter jurisdiction.
Okay.
What's the amount in controversy in this dispute?
Potentially the amount in controversy would be, I think, $200,000 because the limit of, $250,000 because the at-fault motorist had $50,000 and the underinsured motorist coverage is $300,000. So the difference between
But what is the actual amount in controversy? What I've seen suggests that the victim's claim, Nicole Haight's claim, was for about $60,000, of which $50,000 has been satisfied, which suggests that the amount in controversy is $10,000, and by my calculation, that's a lot less than $75,000.
I'm not sure if I see where the amount is only $10,000. I don't believe we would be here.
The question is, where is your allegation of the amount in controversy? We looked in your pleadings. Your pleadings never allege an amount in controversy. Your pleading should have been dismissed summarily in the district court because you don't even make the statutorily required allegation. You allege what the policy limit is, but that's not the amount in controversy.
She could potentially recover up to $200,000.
What is the nature of her injury?
She has bodily injuries that would allow her to recover not just the medical expenses, but also for pain and suffering.
Your policy pays for pain and suffering?
For underinsured motorist coverage?
Yes, because it covers bodily injury, and bodily injury is
What amount has she demanded that you pay? That would be a good starting place.
I know that we could not agree as to the value of the claim, which is why I believe that she had demanded arbitration. But, of course, before you could get to arbitration, we had to file the DJ.
And arbitration to resolve a dispute.
Yes.
Right? You get a dispute when somebody says, I want X, and the insurance company says, I ain't giving you X. So what's X?
I believe that X was the policy limit, but I don't believe that was alleged, as you have pointed out.
In any event, as I say, there's no allegation of this in any of your pleadings.
Well, in the jurisdictional statement.
It's not. Not only not in the jurisdictional statement here, there's no allegation in the district court.
I believe it is in the jurisdictional statement,
but not elsewhere.
But I would have to refer to the complaint.
The underlying complaint doesn't set out the amount. Bottom line.
Jurisdictional statement doesn't allege the amount in controversy. It says in a conclusional fashion that it exceeds $75,000. Mm-hmm. Doesn't tell us what the amount is or how you reach that conclusion.
Well, the way I reach the conclusion is, as you put the question to me, is that I believe that the demand was for the policy limit, which would be the difference in this case between the $300 and the $50 that she recovered from the at-fault motorist. And I believe that in that situation where the demand was made for the policy limit,
Don't try to talk over me.
Sorry.
You might want to take advantage of the statute, which provides that allegations of jurisdiction may be amended, even in the Court of Appeals. Because the allegation of jurisdiction in this case is deficient, it is perhaps possible to amend it to showing an amount in controversy, but we want to see some concrete allegations about why you think more than $75,000 is actually in controversy.
I could have 14 days to file.
Give you 14 days for that purpose.
Thank you very much. We respectfully submit that the endorsement in this case required the defendant to be in a covered auto at the time of the accident. And if we are correct, the judgment below cannot stand. The covered auto language, which is at the center of this dispute, appears in the policy in a number of places. And the best place to start may be with the policy declarations and the schedule of coverages found on page 35 of the appendix. I'm holding this up for you at the moment. If you look at item 2...
You cannot possibly read a document
I realize
that distance.
I'm sorry. I just wanted... Okay. At least so that you know what it looks like. Okay.
It looks like a piece of paper with writing on it.
Okay. Item 2...
We have it in
the appendix.
In the appendix.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Without the color, though, which we missed.
Well, okay. Item 2, above the schedule of coverages, on page 35 of the appendix... states that it applies to covered autos. And according to the schedule of coverages, immediately below item 2, the symbol for covered autos in the column for covered autos is the number 7. What is the number 7? To find out the number 7, you go to page 12 of the appendix. Page 12 of the appendix has a description of covered autos, and the number 7 corresponds to specifically described autos. Going back to the schedule, or going back to the declarations, item 3 for the schedule of described autos is checkmarked. When you go to the attached schedule to the policy, you find two cars, neither of which was the vehicle in which the defendant was riding at the time of the accident. The schedule also tells you that the total premium paid for the underinsured motorist coverage was $55. It was the named insured's decision to insure only specifically described autos when he paid $55 for $300,000 in coverage. Although broader coverage was available for any auto, and if you look at the description of symbols, the number 1 applies to any auto. But he elected not to buy coverage for any auto.
Is this endorsement something drafted by Grinnell, or is this some general?
It is. That's a good question. It is not drafted by Grinnell. They're using the form supplied by the Insurance Services Office, which is a general clearinghouse for forms.
So this is the other company.
Exactly. But I will say this: this endorsement is designed to go specifically with this business auto coverage form, and we know that because the endorsement has in the upper right-hand corner.
Why is Grinnell using this form? I gather that the particular question that we have here has now reached the highest courts of 4 states.
Yes.
And 3 of the 4 states have held that the coverage includes family members not in a covered vehicle.
Correct.
And those 3 cases are all... 2 of them are from 2002, and
yes,
one of them is from 2001.
Right.
So if the insurance industry, or Grinnell in particular, didn't like that outcome, there's plenty of time to change the policy. Here we are in 2011, 10 years later. Why wouldn't one say, okay, you know, 3 state Supreme Courts have held that it includes family members not in covered autos. Grinnell issues its policy after that. There we are.
Well, I think, Judge Easterbrook, the form is in use, and I don't think they're going to react to just admittedly the first state or the second state to address the question. We do have the Wisconsin
states like
case.
Michigan are large enough to be interesting, don't have enough people in them.
I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I think that when you're looking at the language of the policy, you have to take the policy language and interpret it according to its meaning. And certainly you can look at what other courts are saying with regard to that.
Usually said by the insurance industry when a judge asks this question about why didn't you change the language of the policy, what's usually said will be something like, this language had the benefit of judicial interpretations, and we didn't change the language, even though it's ambiguous, because we didn't want to disturb those judicial interpretations. We knew that this language had that meaning, and so we kept it. And now here we've got 3 state courts saying that this language has that meaning, and the insurance company saying, and so we kept the language the same, but we want a different meaning. And that gives me a little trouble.
Well, it certainly didn't trouble the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Well, it didn't trouble the majority. It did trouble the dissent.
Yes. I mean, I'm not here to tell you that every court has found in our favor. We want the case decided, though, on its merits. Excuse me. We want the case decided on its merits, and certainly you will look at certain decisions, but not to the exclusion of what the language actually says. I already see that my time is up. I do want to have some rebuttal to talk about.
Oh, the light says your time has expired, counsel.
We ask you to. I'll give
you probably a minute since we've taken some of your time on jurisdiction. Ms. Wood.
We ask you to reverse. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, counsel. May it please the court. Mary Wood on behalf of the appellee, Nicole Haight, in this case.
Ms. Wood, does this case belong in federal court?
Well, Your Honor, I don't necessarily. I know that counsel is going to try to justify his jurisdictional choice here.
Not just him justifying his choice. Lawyers for both sides are responsible for ensuring that the limits of federal jurisdiction are adhered to. It's as much your responsibility as your adversary's.
And Your Honor,
again, does this case belong in federal court? Does the amount in controversy, given that your client has already been paid $50,000, exceed $75,000?
Yes, I believe that it does, Your Honor. I can't tell you the particular case because I'm not prepared to answer that today, but I will answer it in a supplemental brief if you would like. But when this case was first filed in the Northern District of Illinois, I did look at that question myself to see on what basis the amount in controversy was judged. And I did find a case saying that the amount in controversy is judged based on the policy limit, not by the injuries in the case or by the demand.
If you think that, you're thinking wrong. The amount of the policy is not the amount in controversy. The amount in controversy, as we've said repeatedly, is the amount that would be needed to satisfy the plaintiff's demand fully on the day the suit begins. Now, that means that's the amount your client believes the injury was, less $50,000. That's the amount that would be needed to satisfy your client's demand on the date the suit begins. That's what we need to know.
I'll be happy to answer that. Ms. Haight, you did ask about her arguments. About her injuries. She suffered multiple pelvic fractures. She sustained $60,000 in medical damages as of the date that this case was filed in the lower district court. She continues to have medical treatment for those injuries. Her injuries are expected to be permanent, and she continues to have pain and loss of functioning. So I do believe that we would have a valid policy limit claim.
So she sued the driver, did she, or what?
She actually settled with the at-fault driver.
So there was no actual lawsuit, it was just...
We filed suit simply to protect the statute of limitations. It was very close to the expiration of the statute of limitations when we finalized our settlement with the at-fault driver.
That was just the limit of his insurance.
Yes, the $50,000 was his limit. We had communicated with Grinnell all along to alert them of the potential underinsured motorist claim. As part of our settlement with the at-fault driver, we were required to give Grinnell notice of the impending settlement, give them the option to substitute their check for the at-fault driver's check and step in and subrogate against him. Or they also had the right to require us to file suit. Grinnell, in writing, waived all of that, gave us permission to accept the settlement. And before we had the opportunity to make a settlement demand on Grinnell, this declaratory judgment action was filed in the federal court. So we didn't have the opportunity to make a demand. But I can answer that yes, I do believe that the amount in controversy will be more than $75,000.
I have to say, I don't find your interpretation of the agreement to be persuasive. It's quite clear that the insured gets to choose what kind of coverage he gets, and there's one for any auto, and then there's the one for the covered autos. And this is carried through in the endorsement, right? The endorsement makes clear this is business auto coverage for covered autos, class 7, right? It's not other people's cars. And I think that's understood when you read the, you know, who is an insured, right?
Well, Your Honor, to answer your question, and I think that the three courts in Michigan, Maryland, and Nebraska also addressed
the courts. It's just an original matter. I don't see it. Just seems
okay. On page A12, that's the business auto coverage form. There is a section entitled covered autos. And it says there, the following numerical symbols describe the autos that may be covered autos.
And,
and there are 9 different designations. And that description applies to explain to the reader of the policy that wherever a covered auto is referred to in the policy, that's what they're talking about. So in other words, wherever the Grinnell policy says covered auto, it's referring to those autos listed in the policy. But where the policy does not say covered auto.
The endorsement says that it's for a covered auto, this endorsement modifies insurance. Okay? So it's saying this is for covered autos, right? That's what it's about. That's the whole policy.
Well, Your Honor, what that introductory language says is for covered autos licensed or garaged in Illinois, this endorsement modifies particular types of coverage. Now, I think that language, far from operating as a coverage limitation, as Grinnell argues, that language for a covered auto licensed or garaged in Illinois, it's more reasonably interpreted as a choice of law provision. In other words, it's present in 3 endorsements for the policy. The uninsured motorist, underinsured motorist, and another endorsement called Illinois Changes.
It says for a covered auto licensed in Illinois. Well, obviously, it's Illinois underinsured motorist.
Right. So
the point is, it's for covered autos and not for. And why would a business insurance policy be protecting someone who's driving in someone else's car? I mean,
what sense
does it make?
Notwithstanding the designation or the characterization of this as a business policy.
What do you mean notwithstanding? That's the key, right?
Well,
this is business insurance.
No, the characterization of a policy can't overcome the fact that the business in question here is an individual, a sole proprietorship that has no separate business existence besides the individual insured.
All right, but he chose to get business insurance, which would give some coverage, you know, for his car, people in his or his family members in his car, but not in someone else's car.
Well, Your Honor,
how do you get that?
The underinsured motorist endorsement itself, I think we have to refer to the plain language of that endorsement. And I would first point out that the general definitions in the part of the policy that Grinnell did draft, not the endorsements, but the general definitions page A21, insured is defined as anyone qualifying as an insured in the who is an insured provision of the applicable coverage type. So in other words, insured can be defined differently by coverage type.
Yes, but why on earth would they have a different definition in this section B from what it says at the top? This is for covered auto this is for covered autos licensed in Illinois. It's not for other people's automobiles.
Well, Your Honor, the definition of who is an insured in the underinsured motorist coverage endorsement specifically makes a couple of different distinctions. If the named insured is designated as an individual, so in other words, notwithstanding this being called a business policy, the policy itself contemplates that it can be issued to an individual. And in this case, it is. On the endorsement itself, it says named insured Sean Haight. If the named insured is designated in the declarations as an individual, then the following are insureds: the named insured and any family member, period. After that, definition B, anyone else occupying a covered auto.
Yeah, I completely misunderstand B. The point is, of course, the named insured and any family members, they get the benefit of the covered license, covered auto insurance, which includes these temporary vehicles, right? B says, well, anybody else occupying a covered auto, he gets the temporary substitute also, provided the covered vehicle is out of service because of breakdown, right? Right? Because we know the named insured and any family members get the temporary vehicle. That's in the policy. But if you want someone, anyone else who finds himself, who's not a named insured or family member, he just finds himself one of these covered autos, he gets protection, not only for the covered auto, but even if he's in a temporary substitute, right? That's all it's about. It's not anything that...
Well, Your Honor, Illinois cases, applying Illinois principles of contract interpretation...
Look, principles of contract interpretation don't get you anywhere. Either it's clear, you know, you read it, you study it, you look at all the relevant provisions, you come to a conclusion, it clearly is meant for covered autos. It's not meant for people in someone else's car. The passenger is someone else's car. That's not what it's about.
Well,
that's why you have the one and the seven. With the one, you know, you can expand your coverage if you elect one. But he just wanted seven, which is just the covered autos.
Your Honor, respectfully,
you want to expand it into one. You want to change this. You want to take the, you know, little hook off the seven and make it a one.
Your Honor, I believe that if Grinnell wanted to limit this entire policy to only covering the use of covered autos, there would have been no need
that's
to make
exactly
all of the distinctions.
It under insured. That's the first line under the title.
Your Honor,
it's
then
for covered autos.
All the
period.
Well, I believe that introductory language simply alerts the reader.
It's the scope of the policy.
Well, what it says in that sentence is that for covered autos licensed in Illinois, the following types of insurance are going to be modified by the terms.
Exactly, and the rest of the endorsement is about that.
Your Honor, if Grinnell intended to cover only covered autos and nothing else, it could have simplified its own...
temporary substitutes.
Or temporary substitutes for covered autos. It could have simplified its entire policy by including one definition of insured.
Of course, you can always, you know, find another form of words.
Well, Your Honor...
Thank you, Ms. Wood.
Okay. I see that I'm out of time.
Mr. Ressus, we'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you very much. We'll start on a different tack this time. We're going to start with the endorsement. The endorsement has, as Judge Posner said, the first four words, for any covered auto. Those are important words. And we're arguing that the endorsement cannot be read in isolation from the policy with which it issued. Those four words, first covered auto, connect that endorsement back to everything I said about 15 minutes ago about the policy declarations, item two of the policy declarations, the description of covered auto, all of that stuff. It's limited to specifically described autos. The defendant was not in a specifically described auto. Let's compare that endorsement and two others like it involving uninsured motorist coverage to the other 13 endorsements. All of those other endorsements begin with different language. They don't begin with the words for any covered auto. They begin with where that language ends. This endorsement modifies the insurance. 10 endorsements start that way. The endorsement that brings us here today starts for any covered auto. Not in the brief and not in the argument did counsel ever give any explanation, any meaning to those words that would in any way explain why that endorsement starts for any covered auto and the other 10 endorsements don't start with that language. The district court adopted an interpretation of the endorsement that we respectfully submit was not reasonable. Far from creating any ambiguity, that covered auto language at the start of the endorsement links the endorsement to the specifically described autos listed in the policy. and the defendant was not entitled to coverage when she was not in a covered auto at the time of the accident. We cannot emphasize enough the fact that this is a commercial auto policy. It only covers specifically described autos. We know that from the designation.
Thank you very much, counsel.
Thank you very much. We ask you to reverse.
The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess.